You are listening to the official podcast of the Church at Lake Travis in Austin, Texas, a community of faith that exists to connect the disconnected.
All right, let's try this. Good morning, Church at Lake Travis. Oh, I think you can do better than that. Good morning, Church at Lake Travis. It is so awesome to see you this morning. I am so excited about worshiping with you this morning, hanging out with longtime friends. I'm blown away by this, 20 years. Jeremy and Ashley Self, I think they've been married 19 of those, but we got to do premarital before that, so that's really, really cool. And that evidently means that they got married incredibly young. Because I am not at all old. And it's great to hang out with the team. The team has been exceptionally kind to me while I'm here. Thank you so much for this opportunity. Hey, I want to dive right into today's teaching. And here's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about the importance of fun, celebration, party. When it comes to marriage, when it comes to relationships. One of my favorite verses is Proverbs 15:15. I think it's going to come on the screen. And as it does, here's what I want you to do. I want you to say this out loud with me and together. We're going to say it out loud. And let me just warn you, my tendency here when it comes to this. The number of times we say something out loud is usually contingent upon how involved you are when we say it. So if you blow me away the first time, we'll say it once. If you kind of halfway do it, we may say it three or four times. I will break in on this one, but it's one of my favorite verses in all of Proverbs, and it reads like this. You ready to go? I'll break in after the first phrase right there at the comma. Let's go. All the days of the afflicted are bad. Just pause right there. The God's Word translation reads like this. Every day is terrible for a miserable person. And you want to say, duh. Have you ever met these kinds of people? I mean, all the days of the afflicted are bad. Why? Because they have such a horrible attitude. You've met these people. You've experienced them. When you see them coming, you immediately start looking for an exit, a hallway, somewhere to go so you don't have to interact. There's this really incredible study. It's by the Heart Math Institute. And here's what they say. The Heart Math Institute indicates that when you have a feeling in your heart, it goes to every cell in your body, then outward, and get this, people up to 10 feet away can experience what you're feeling. I mean, every day you're broadcasting how you feel to the people around you. All the days of the afflicted are bad. They're not just bad for you, they're bad for the people in your relational world. But let's finish the passage. You ready? All the days of the afflicted are bad, but a glad heart has a continual feast regardless of the circumstances. I love this. One of my favorite authors, he's a guy by the name of John Gordon. And John's written a lot of books. I highly recommend every book he's written, and he says that research from Harvard University supports the idea that the emotions you feel are contagious to the people around you. Let's put that theory to the test, okay? You ready? Just a moment, I'm going to count to three. And when I count to three, I want you to do something. I want you to look to the person sitting next to you or, if necessary, near you. And I want you to give them your best Sunday morning, Austin, Texas smile. Now, if you're a true Texan, the indication that we get in Alabama is everything is bigger in Texas. So if you're a true Texan, I want you to turn to the person next to you or people sitting around you, and I want you to give them your best Austin, Texas smile. And let's just see what happens in the room. You ready? I'm going to count to three. One, two, three, go. Oh, yeah, give it a moment. Anybody see that? Hey, think of it this way. You pull back in. When you smile at somebody, what almost always happens? They do what? They smile back. When you laugh with someone, what do they almost always do? They laugh back, unless you're just weird about it. Proverbs 15:15, I love that passage, but I want to hang out for the rest of this talk in New Testament, John chapter 2, because John chapter 2 walks out what Proverbs 15:15 talks about, and it's indication that this principle, all the days of the afflicted are bad, but a person who has a glad heart, they have a continual feast regardless of the circumstances. John 2 puts this theory to the test. It's a story from the life of Jesus. The Gospel of John revolves around 7 miracles. The Gospel doesn't call them miracles. The Gospel refers to them as signs. And this is the first sign. And it's indicative of the kind of life Jesus wants you and I to experience. And it happens, we've been talking about marriage all weekend, right? This happens at a wedding. And let me just tell you, as I read this story, I fell in love with first century Jewish weddings. Here's why. I've got three daughters. The oldest is married. Thank God, we've already paid for that one. Check, it's done. I got 2 more. I love first century Jewish weddings for this reason. First century Jewish weddings, the ceremony lasted about the length of our ceremony, but the celebration continued for somewhere between 3 and 7 days, depending on the budget of the groom. Oh, yes. The groom paid for the wedding. As the father of 3 daughters, I think we need to get back to our roots, people. Let's get back fast. So this is the first miracle. This is the first sign. Jeremy would love that. He's got 4 sons. Let's do that quickly. Let's read this story. It's a really, really awesome story. It'll come up on the screen. The next day, there was a wedding celebration in the village of Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples were also invited to the celebration. I love this. It makes me smile. If you invited Jesus to your wedding or to your party, it wasn't Jesus plus 1, it was Jesus plus 12. He brought the party with him. The wine supply ran out during the festivities, so Jesus' mother told him, they have no more wine. And then look at this. This is awesome. Next verse, if you would. And Jesus said to her, woman, what does this have to do with me? Let me just say something to the guys in the room. Guys, if you're going to memorize a passage of scripture, do not start with this one. I tried this on my wife once when she asked me to take out the garbage during a football game. I looked at her and said, woman, what does that have to do with me? She gave me the death stare. I said, hey, sweetheart, it's in the Bible and I'm a pastor. It did not help. New Living Translation tries to lessen the blow because it reads like this. Dear woman, what does this have to do with me? The last phrase, verse 4, the last phrase is critical. My hour has not yet come. I just want you to focus on that. Here's what scholars say, the people who study this kind of stuff. Here's what they say. They say whenever Jesus refers to his hour or his time, my time, they say in the Gospel of John, it's always a reference to his impending death. It's always a reference to the cross. Now, here's why this is critically important. You guys don't know me. So when I start talking about joy, when I start talking about celebration, you could, because you don't have context for me, you could say, here it is, another pie in the sky, sort of positive outlook on life, motivational talk. You could think that unless we caveat it with this statement, my hour has not yet come, because here's what Jesus is going to teach us about joy in this passage. He's going to teach us that the joy he came to give us is not a because of kind of joy. See, most of us think that joy, We really interpret joy as happiness. And happiness is dependent upon happenings. If good stuff is happening to you, then you can be happy. But joy is not synonymous with happiness. See, joy is this fierce belief that God is with me, that God is for me, and that regardless of what happens to me or around me, my sovereign God is working all things together for my ultimate good and His great glory. And because of that, I can have joy. And that's the kind of joy Jesus is going to introduce to us in John chapter 2. It's not a because of joy. It's an in spite of kind of joy. My hour has not yet come. Here's what Jesus is saying. He's saying, Mom, time out. You need to be aware of what you're asking. Because the moment I do the first miracle, in verse 11 and verse 12 of John 2 is going to tell us, he does the first sign. This was the first sign Jesus did. And what Jesus is saying when he says, my hour has not yet come, he's saying this, Mom, when I do the first miracle, a death march begins that's going to culminate at the cross. So you need to be aware of what you're asking. He's giving us a lesson about joy. Verse number 5. But his mother told the servants. This whole story just makes me smile. His mother told the servants, do whatever he tells you. She just ignores him altogether. She's a typical mom. I know what needs to take place. Standing nearby, I want you to do the math, track the math, we'll come back to it, were 6 stone water jars used for Jewish ceremonial washing. Each could hold 20 to 30 gallons of water. Jesus told the servants, fill the jars with water. When the jars had been filled, he said, now dip some out, take it to the master of ceremonies. So the servants followed his instructions. When the master of ceremonies tasted the water that was now wine, not knowing where it had come from, he was not in on the miracle. Though, of course, the servants knew. He called the bridegroom over and said, a host always serves the best wine first. Then he goes to Trader Joe's and stashes the 3-buck chuck and brings it out later. But you have saved the best wine until now. Isn't this awesome? Anybody track that math? There were 6 stone water jars, 20 to 30 gallons each. Do that multiplication. That means, this is how many gallons of water? 120 to, I'm from Alabama, so you might have to help me. 120 to 180 gallons of water, right? 120 to 180 gallons of water that has now been transformed into the best wine imaginable. This has been calculated. This is the equivalent of 900 fifths or bottles of wine. Now, let's just do average. I'm not a wine drinker, but I'm certain some of you are. But let's just go average cost of wine. Let's not do the Trader Joe's wine. Let's not even do the Target brand. Let's go up just a little to maybe an average. Let's say it was $30 a bottle. I'm told that would be an average bottle of wine, $30 a bottle, average. If it was just average, that means this was a $27,000 miracle. Oh, man. 900 fifths of wine makes you want to ask, doesn't it? How long did this party last? And it also says this to me. The God I choose to follow, he's the God who's more than enough. 900 fifths of wine. Now, this is a passage about joy. If the church ever recovers this, if the church, and we've so blown this, right? I mean, you go into most churches and it's so somber. It's so stark. It's so void of life. It's so void of celebration. It's so void of laughter. If somebody laughs out loud, somebody immediately thinks something's got to be wrong. If the church ever recovers this principle, I apologize, that keeps happening to me, this principle of joy, our influence with the world is going to go up several notches. By the way, if your marriage ever recovers this principle, if you decide to live out this principle in your workplace, your marriage may be challenged. Your workplace may be challenged. But if you ever determine, I'm going to live with joy, the kind of joy that Jesus meant for me to experience, you're going to see God do a transformational work in your marriage and in your workplace. Now, let me just walk this out for a moment. One of the most interesting facets about the life and ministry of Jesus is this. If he wasn't preaching, if he wasn't teaching, if he wasn't healing the sick, he was usually at a party, at a banquet, at a feast, at a celebration. In fact, one commentary I read said this. It could be said that Jesus was preoccupied with parties. And this was one of the things that annoyed the religious crowd. The religious crowd looked at Jesus attending parties, and they had this assessment. He can't be all that spiritual. After all, he goes to parties. Not only does he go to parties, he actually seems to enjoy himself when he's there. They said about Jesus, he comes eating and he comes drinking. And Jesus never corrected that perception. In fact, in Matthew chapter 10, verse 19, Jesus described himself like this. I love this description. This is Jesus' self-description. The Son of Man came. Anybody see it? The Son of Man came doing what? Enjoying life. Have you ever thought about Jesus like that? He came enjoying life. And it makes sense, right? Because when you read the Gospels, what do you see Jesus doing? You see children being attracted to Jesus. I've got news for you. Kids aren't attracted to people who look like they've been weaned on dill pickles. Children just don't care. Furthermore, the non-religious crowd, they love Jesus. He never suffered to draw a crowd. And part of the reason was he lived with a sense of joy that was irrepressible and compelling. And this ticked off the religious community. They looked at Jesus and said, that guy is just having way too much fun. I don't think that charge has been leveled against Christians since. I mean, when's the last time you ever heard people look at the church and say, you know, the thing about those Christians, the thing about those people, they just have way too much fun. They just like to party way too much. And here's my question, why? What's happened to our version of the gospel? What's happened to our vision of joy that causes us to live such a less compelling and less joy-filled life than Jesus experienced? Why have we, by and large, become joyless? Here's another question I have. Why, first miracle, why was the first miracle Jesus performed a miracle at a wedding? I mean, does he have to get involved? Is this a life or death situation? If you're launching a movement, aren't there better ways to launch a movement? I mean, later on in his ministry, he's going to heal terminal illnesses. Later on, he's going to literally actually raise people from the dead. Why not launch your ministry with a press-getting miracle like that? Why just take the wedding of an ordinary couple that's going to last the celebration 3 days instead of 7 and turn water into wine? I think he's giving us an indication about his identity. I think Jesus wants us to know at the outset of his ministry, I'm the true master of ceremonies. I'm the Lord of the party. I'm the life of the party. And I didn't just come to give you an hour, 10 minutes of sanity, peace, and chuckle on Sunday morning at 10 a.m. when you gather at high school in Lake Travis. I came to fill every ordinary moment of your life that with joy that is irrepressible. Joy that's not based on circumstances. Joy that's not based on happiness. I am the master of the ceremonies, and I came to make your life a party. Now, I don't mean a party that leaves you with regret the next morning. I don't mean a party that leaves you feeling worse the next morning than you did before the party started the night before. I mean a life of fulfillment, meaning, purpose, filling every moment. Don't you want to experience that? A few months ago, May of this year, my wife and I got to officiate at one of my favorite weddings ever. Favorite because of the person that it involved, a girl who's been with us almost since the beginning. And it's one of these A2 stories. She found out about our church. We call A2 Church a church for people who've given up on church. And Mary Elizabeth Goodrich found out about our church because she went to a bar in Birmingham, and there was this really cute guy, she thought, playing guitar in that bar. And after his set, she went up to him and said, "Hey, I love your music. I'd like to hear more. Where can I hear you play?" And he said, "I play at this church called A2 Church." So she got introduced to A2 Church at a bar. I love that. That's the gospel of Jesus, people. So Mary Elizabeth started attending our church and actually became part of our team. Her background was in education. She went on to get her master's in counseling. Now she works as a counselor in our community, but she was with us almost from the beginning, and just a beautiful young single lady, similar in age to my daughters. So Janet, my wife, and her just built this awesome friendship. And Mary Elizabeth would often talk to Janet about what she was hoping for in a man, what she was hoping for in a marriage. And she had these incredible ideas about marriage and about life together. So we got to officiate at her wedding. And basically, here's her story. Mary Elizabeth was sitting in her favorite coffee bar in Birmingham, Alabama, which is next to the University of Alabama, right there in Birmingham, UAB. UAB is an incredible university. It has maybe the largest international population of students of any university in America. The international population of students is crazy. And Mary Elizabeth is just sitting in there, minding her own business, and in walks this tall, slender Nigerian guy named Sidney Akinaka. I just love saying his name. It's fun to say it. And Sidney has just finished a game of soccer with his Nigerian pals, and they walk into this coffee place, and Mary Elizabeth looks at Sidney, and Sidney looks at Mary Elizabeth, and simultaneously, they have that experience. Oh my gosh, that person is fine. So they strike up a conversation, and Mary Elizabeth and Sidney Akinaka, they talk for 3+ hours. And Sidney's friends look at him and say, "Hey, dude, we are leaving, man." He says, "Don't worry about it. I'll find a ride home." He was planning on riding with Mary Elizabeth. Mary Elizabeth is a typical Southern girl. So when the coffee bar finally closes, Sidney looks at her and says, "Can I get a ride home, Mary Elizabeth? They've only known each other for 3 hours." She looks back at him and says, "I don't know you. We've only known each other three." He says, "Well, how am I going to get home?" "I don't know. I guess you'll have to find your own way." Sidney is now an Uber driver. That's not a joke. That's true. But they began dating, and they had this incredible wedding. And the wedding was in Nashville, Tennessee, at the estate. It was literally an estate. I didn't know Mary Elizabeth's parents were loaded. I wish I'd known that. I would have asked them for a gift for our church, because we went to this estate in Nashville, Tennessee, and the estate was mind-blowing. And we had this beautiful Southern wedding. It was really interesting to me. I love weddings that are multicultural when they include a celebration of all cultures in the wedding. And you had all of Mary Elizabeth's bridesmaids. Most of them came from Auburn University, because that's where she went to school. So you had all these Southern belles. on one side. And then on the other side, all of Sydney's guys, every one of them, international students from Nigeria. And I mean all of them went to the same school of class. These guys wore suits that were incredible. And we did the wedding, and the wedding was fun. Then we went to the reception afterward. And the reception, at first I thought, this is very nice, because it was really, really fancy. And Mary Elizabeth and Sydney, they did those typical things you do at weddings. You know, the first dance, the dance with the mother of the bride, and all of these different things. And all of that was nice. And then all of a sudden, Mary Elizabeth and Sydney disappeared. And I'm thinking, where did they go? I didn't really care, because they opened up food, and the food was the best I've ever had at any wedding. They divided the buffet in half. They had the Nashville food, which was hot chicken and waffles and all this stuff that I ate too much of. So I forgot that. I gravitated. At that time, my wife and I were doing paleo, and almost all of it was paleo-friendly, and she even said, I'm giving you a pass. You can even do the rice, and they had something called Jaffa rice, which is a Nigerian dish. It was incredible. I'll have that every day of the week and twice on Sunday, and we ate all of that, and then all of a sudden, people, you could hear this rumbling in the crowd, because Mary Elizabeth and Sydney were coming back into the wedding. But now they were dressed in traditional Nigerian attire. And Mary Elizabeth looked like this Nigerian princess, except her skin was ivory white. And Sydney looked like a Nigerian prince, except he had a cane. And I'm thinking, the dude is 29 years old. What's he doing with a cane? And I turned to Abiye Aprakuma, who's another Nigerian who attends our church. I said, what's the deal with the cane? He said, oh, that is a symbol. That means that now Sydney has become an elder statesman. I said, I'd like a cane. I mean, it doubles as a weapon when you need it. And they came down and they began doing this dance. I didn't know Nigeria had top 40 music, but they do. And they had practiced a top 40 Nigerian song. And Mary Elizabeth, who is part of our worship team at the church, she was singing this song with all of these motions. I mean, just getting into it with Sydney. And I'm thinking, this is awesome. I like this. And people tried to come up on the dance floor to join Mary Elizabeth and Sydney. But the MC fanned them off and said, oh no, not yet, not time for that. You sit where you are. And then out of the back came this guy in a bright blue blazer. Very bright blue. And he comes and he's got a wad of dollar bills. A wad of dollar bills. And he comes up as Mary Elizabeth and Sydney are dancing. And he takes those dollar bills and he begins to throw them in the air over Mary Elizabeth and over Sydney. And I'm like, I turn again to Abiate. What's he doing? He said, it's called spraying. It's a Nigerian custom. He said, Chris, all of Sydney's friends are college age. They are broke. They don't have any money. That's why they're throwing dollar bills. He said, if this took place in Nigeria, Mary Elizabeth's father would probably walk away with enough money to cover the entire wedding bill. I said, Abiye, I not only want to be Jewish, I want to be Nigerian. Bring the cash over here. They finish this dance, and then all of a sudden the MC comes back on and says, the dance floor is now open. And then you hear it drop. Doom, do 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 do. Oh yeah, Bruno Mars is in the house. Now I've got elders there. I mean, elders who are so proper. And in our church, we would think it was a move of God if they went like, "Thank you, Jesus." I mean, we would actually think, oh my gosh, revival has broken out if they did it. But these elders about break their neck, get into the dance floor, and they start dancing. And all of Mary Elizabeth's southern belles, they wind up in the dance floor, and they're getting with it. And Sydney's Nigerian groomsmen, they're hitting that dance floor. And I just stand there watching this celebration break out, and it hits me. This is what God intended. Life as a party. Life as a celebration. Now, I don't want anyone to misunderstand, because I can already hear somebody coming up to me and reminding me, Chris, Jesus came to suffer. Jesus came to die. And Jesus indicated that if we follow him, we will suffer and we must take up our cross and follow him. I agree. All of that is true. But let's never forget this. All of the suffering is simply necessary to lead us to the ultimate end, which is a celebration the likes of which we have never seen, where Jesus will once again serve as the master of ceremonies, the Lord of the party, the life of the party, and every child of God from every nation will gather at the throne of God, and we will declare that he is good and he has given us joy in spite of our circumstances. Now, I don't know if you clap here, but if you're looking for a place to clap, that's a good place to clap. So let me give you a few thoughts. By the way, I know what some of you are doing right now. That's nice. You sort of remind me right now of Joel Osteen. Yeah. Well, let me try to put some research with this, okay? There's this dude named William Fry, and he pioneered this back in the late 50s, early 60s. And here's what William Fry did. He's Stanford University psychiatrist, was a professor there for many, many years before his death, and he pioneered the effects of joy, laughter, humor on our physical condition. Here's what he wrote, Dr. Fry's research. Joy, laughter increases pulse rate, increases the circulation of the blood, increases oxygen levels, causes remarkable relaxation. Let me give you this quote from Dr. Fry. He wrote, joy diffuses rage, it diminishes the impulse of hostility. Anger demands a serious attitude, but humor diminishes the tightness and severity necessary for anger. If joy is experienced, rage is impossible. Anybody here suffer with depression? Don't raise your hand. I went through a serious issue with depression for years. Part of this message is the result of years of depression and what God did for me when he brought me out of that depression. Listen to what he writes about depression. Next screen. Humor and depression are incompatible. With only the exception of the most severe degrees of depression, humor relieves the devitalizing grip of depression. It offsets, opposes, diminishes depression. That's research from the 50s and 60s. But way before all of this, here's what Isaiah says. Isaiah says, God prophesying, I will give you a garment of praise, celebration for a spirit of despair or heaviness. That's William Fry. Anybody heard of a guy named Norman Cousins? Norman Cousins came right on the heels of Dr. William Fry, 60s, 70s, early 80s. Norman Cousins suffered from a debilitating illness, severe pain, but he writes in a book that has become a classic in that field called Anatomy of an Illness that he healed himself through a regimen of laughter and vitamins. In fact, he discovered this. He discovered that 10 minutes of belly laughing a day would give him the equivalent of 2 hours of sleep a night when even a morphine drip couldn't bring on sleep at night. I could go to talk about more research. A guy by the name of Dr. Lee Burke, he's an immunologist. And he has documented the fact that laughter, joy, it actually strengthens and sustains our immune system. Do you have regular health problems? Then build laughter and joy into your life. So let me give you 3 thoughts, okay? And by the way, the 3 thoughts are really, really quick. So number one, how to bring the party back. Number one, make room for it. Hey, if Jesus' schedule ministry demands incredible, if Jesus' schedule allowed him to attend a wedding, if he could make room for joy, your life has room for joy. Make room for it. I want to do something. This may be the best 45 seconds to 1 minute of the message. I want to show you a clip that's been viewed 92 million times on YouTube. And then I want to ask you a question on the heels of this clip. But as you watch this clip, I want you to ask yourself, and make sure the audio's up on this clip, really good. I want you to ask yourself, what kind of God makes this possible? So check out this video clip. Awesome or what? Here's my question. What kind of God creates this? What does that kind of joy and laughter say about God and say about the life he wants us to experience? That's about as pure and undiluted as you can get. That child's laughter isn't based upon stuff, possessions. It's based on one of the most simple things, a parent interacting in the most simple ways. And I think almost every day, God rips a piece of paper and says, could you laugh? Let me give you a glimpse. Sometimes it's a friend's interaction. Sometimes it's a billboard. Sometimes it comes through a television program or a comedy, and there's just this moment of, oh, make room for laughter. Here's the second thought. Stay connected to the source. Jesus is the real life of the party. And three, make your relational world the kind of place your people want to come home to. I went off on that yesterday at the clinic, at the conference. Jan and I, our goal for our kids is to create the kind of relationship with our kids they want to come home to. They want to come back to when they don't have to. This is born out of two passages. The team is going to come right now. It's Jeremiah. It'll come up on the screen. I want you to read what Jeremiah says. They will, just say those two words out loud. They will come home. And they'll sing songs of what? Joy. On the heights of Jerusalem, they'll be radiant because of the Lord's good gifts, the abundant crops of grain, new wine and olive oil, all indicative of celebration. And how about Revelation 19? This is where everything is heading. Then I heard the sound of massed choirs, the sound of a mighty cataract, the sound of strong thunder. Hallelujah, the master reigns. Our God, the sovereign strong, let us celebrate. Let us do what? Anybody see the word? Let us rejoice and give him glory. See, here's the kind of place God is preparing for us. He's preparing the kind of place we want to come home to. This is why intellectuals, you need more capital instead of a few verses. This is why intellectuals like C.S. Lewis would say this. God finds our desires not too strong, but too weak. Because we're paltry creatures who basically, and I'm going to brutalize the sentence here, we rumble around, roughage around in piles of trash when God offers joy that is infinite and beyond compare. Anybody want to experience that joy? I want to invite you to. I want to say a simple prayer, and then we're going to open up the tables for communion and stations for prayer. But if you've never experienced that joy, the joy that Jesus offers, I want to lead you in this prayer. I want to invite you to pray it out loud, but not alone. Church at Lake Travis, would you say this with me to give our friends confidence to say this? Let's say this out loud and together. Heavenly Father, thank you for Jesus, who did what I could never do, lived the life I couldn't live, died the death I deserved to die, but then rose again so that I could have life and have it to the full. I trust Jesus to forgive my sin and lead my life to give me joy.
Thanks for listening to the Church at Lake Travis podcast. For more information on our community of faith, including gathering times and location, check us out online at www.churchlt.com.